has trouble with the snap, and the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson, and he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
No man is more important than the team. No coach is more important than the team. Team.
What a hit, Denzel Ward. You got barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
Did you push yourself to be great today? Did you do it? If you didn't do it, you lost today.
Don't let that team stand in the way. Go away.
Menace to...
It is October 6th, the evening of, at least, for Patreon subscribers. For the rest of yous, it is October 7th. Thank you for joining us on Menace to the Midwest. And what a weekend of Midwest football.
Oh, yeah.
The Buckeyes with a huge win. Huge win. First, I guess you would say significant win.
Yeah, I don't think so, but...
Well, I think so.
I mean,
so.
They beat Cincinnati. I think that's a pretty big win, but that no one talks about.
Yeah, they won't talk about that. You know what it was? It was a great win for Ohio State. A great challenge for Ohio State on offense, because Michigan State has a solid defense, a horrific offense.
Yeah.
But but at the end of the day, it was at the end of the day, I got it. but at the end of the evening, it was a great game for really Ohio State. It was a great test for a bigger test, and really set the tone for their season. And a lot of people are talking about they are the best team in the country, or now they're relevant. And but here we are. But bigger news, in my opinion, bigger Midwest news. How about the Cincinnati Bearcats, the Fighting Luke Fickles?
Yeah,
taking
fix.
Took taking down, the, down UCF,
the national champs, the reigning national champs.
So
right?
I've done nothing but praise Luke Fickle as a football coach since we started the show. I will continue to do so, because he's one of the finest human beings I've met. He's as fine of a football coach as he is a human being, and the proof is in the pudding. He is that Cincinnati team looks so well coached, which is the ultimate question, right? It's not like, how good are they? It's like, they're really good. But at the end of the day, when you look at Luke Fickle and the job he's doing, they are extremely well coached. They're tough. They're well prepared. Brady Collins, the strength coach, has them. They look like a big time football team,
for sure.
And they went and took down the mighty national champs.
Yeah, national champs.
Yeah, they. I mean, they looked really good, and UCF. I mean, that's two losses in a row.
Yeah, UCF might be looking for a new head coach here soon. I mean, man, hot seat in Orlando.
Cincinnati looking like that might be their only loss is to Ohio State.
Yeah, well,
I
will tell you this. As Cincinnati progresses and continues to look how they look this week, that's going to be a further testament to how dominant of a win and how good of a win that was against a team that is not your atypical group of five. Power five team.
Yeah,
right?
That's what I said. Is after watching that game, Ohio State beat the best group of five team out there.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be hard pressed to would love to hear an argument of who's better than Cincinnati outside of the Power Five.
Yeah.
But my favorite thing about the game probably was the troll job by Cincinnati, because I don't know if you guys saw the
video they put out.
Yeah, so for those of you that didn't see it, and the reference was it was the Magic Kingdom, the castle.
Yeah,
you know,
Orlando. That's where Central Florida is.
Yeah. Well, never mind that. Central Florida held their national championship parade at Disney World.
Oh, okay.
And so Cincinnati, after they beat them, put out like immediately. So
it was very quick.
Yeah. Oh, it was pre-made.
It was prepared beforehand.
Yeah.
And they put it out, and it was like the Disney intro to, if any of you have kids, you've seen the Disney intro with the castle and the little shooting star.
When you wish upon a star.
Yeah, and then it says like, and then
it says Walt Disney or
whatever. Walt Disney at the bottom, and it says,
in script,
and it said, you hate to see it.
It was perfect.
It was phenomenal. But
awesome by them.
That's what a great win for Cincinnati. Great win for Luke, and I will say this now, just be prepared for him to get a big time job, and it might not be after this season. It should be, but it, you know, the politics of hiring coaches and turnover, you never know how it's going to go. But he won't be there longer than the next next season.
Which is, it's sad for Cincinnati because you want to see a coach be there for a long time.
Well, I mean, we could go into the politics of it, but the reality is when Cincinnati didn't make the cut, they broke up the Big East and Cincinnati didn't make the cut,
which is ridiculous,
that was the end of Cincinnati like trying to push to become a really good job.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at it, and that, I think if you're Cincinnati, you have to know that that's kind of what you are, right? You're a place that up and coming head coaches go to solidify their resume, to prove themselves and get a better job. I mean, it's not ideal, but if you look at D'Antonio, Brian Kelly, these guys, Butch Jones, that are there for 1 or 2, 3 years and then they move on.
Yeah. But the good thing is if you want success, you hire a coach that does that and then moves on, and you got what you got what you wanted.
Exactly. You have to be just laser focused on getting the coach, because you miss one time and you're just done.
Well, it's what happened to him. They missed out because they weren't as relevant as some of the, like the Louisvilles that made it in the ACC. Yep. And you're like, how did that happen? But anyways, just a big win for them. And before we get into the Ohio State game, another huge game, I guess, on paper,
I guess,
was the top 20 matchup, Iowa at Michigan. And
which neither team should be that high ranked. I'm just saying.
I don't know if either team should be ranked.
Well, terrible. I mean, you can't say that. Iowa's 4-0. They should have been net ranked.
They should have been. They shouldn't be anymore.
Well, that's what happens when you play football. Yeah. Is you lose a game and you show your ass, and then all of a sudden you're not what they thought you were. But they definitely should have been ranked. I mean, they were 4-0. But I will tell you this: it was legitimately a battle of bad quarterback play.
Exactly.
It was like, as you watch the game, you're watching and saying, my God, these two quarterbacks are horrible. Who is going to be worse? And let me tell you who was the worst of the two. Nate Stanley graded out the lowest player on Iowa's offense. And he was graded out 28%.
Oof.
And so we're clear, Shea Patterson was not that much better.
Yeah.
But it was bad. The other problem that Iowa found themselves in, first of all, what it really was a kudos to Dom Brown. He got that defense playing. Mm-hmm. I mean, they played better than they played all year. And Iowa couldn't pass pro, gave up eight sacks. They allowed 23 pressures on 54 total pass plays.
Yikes.
Almost half of their pass plays, the quarterback was under duress. So kudos to Don Brown. What a game plan. What execution by their defense. But it wasn't just the throw game. It wasn't just the pass pro. Iowa ended the game with 1 rushing yard.
Wow.
This is Iowa. Iowa.
Yeah.
Like, this is like Wisconsin Junior.
Yeah, that's what I always say.
1 rushing yard.
That's ridiculous.
And it was the whole game. The game started off, and it was like, oh boy, this is not going to go well for the undefeated Hawkeyes, because they shut down Michigan on the first drive, and Michigan was awful in offense the entire day. And then the running back Sargent fumbled on like the first or second play on offense after that, and gave it right back to Michigan. And you're sitting there like, oh boy. And as the game progressed, you're like, this is bad. But what I really wanted to talk about is this whole Iowa, Wisconsin, and they're different in some aspects, but this archaic offense they run, this I formation, they have fullbacks, and they have this offense that most people, here's how bad it is, right? Alabama used to run this offense, and they abandoned it. Alabama has the best players in the country. If they abandon it, you should too.
Absolutely.
Well, unless you can't get the skill players to run the other kind of offenses, I guess.
That sounds good. I'm with you. But
if all you can get is like 6'8", 320 pound guys to come to your school, you might as well run behind them.
I mean, that's all well and good, but they've never, Iowa's, the Wisconsin's, and even Alabama back when they were a pro style, like under center offense and had poor quarterback play. Mm-hmm. You can't tell me you can't find, I mean, Russell Wilson went to Wisconsin. You can't tell me you can't find a quarterback or you can't, Abadaris went to Wisconsin. He was a great college player. You can find those kids. You watch it every year. Watch the NFL draft. And look at receivers in the NFL. It's not like all of them went to Ohio State, Florida, USC, Clemson. No, there's kids from everywhere. You can find kids, but it's a philosophy. And what blows my mind is teams line up like that on first and second down. It's like under center, 21 personnel, so two backs and a tight end, or maybe two backs and two tight ends, or maybe one back and two tight end, whatever. Just big people, right? Under center, run the ball. They do that. And they try to make a living off of it. And Iowa obviously failed at that, running the ball for 1 yard.
Well,
But what blows my mind is, it's like, all right, first down, second down. All of a sudden, it's third and five. It's like, what do you do now? It's like, oh, here's what you do. Let's get in the shotgun.
Shotgun time.
We're going to go four wide, shotgun. And it's like, what?
Yeah.
How can you be any good at that?
You're not.
You live 80% of your life on first and second down, under center, 21 personnel, handing the ball off, play action, hard play action. How can you live in that world and then be good in those situations when you get in the red zone or it's third and six and you have to throw the ball? You have to spread them out. You have to spread the defense out. How can you be decent in those situations?
Well, it's the same thing. People used to get mad at Urban Meyer for not going under center. And it's like, well, we don't practice that. We don't do the under center thing, so we're not doing it. Like, if you practice and only go under center, then trying to change to a spread option just because it's third and eight, it doesn't. I mean, you're not going to be proficient at it.
No, and it always shows up. Here's the problem. Those teams are so good running the ball, and they're so good in those offenses against equal or lesser opponents, and that's what Alabama faced. They would dominate people and live in that world, and then they would face someone that could match up with them, and it's like, uh-oh, what do we do now?
What do we do now, yeah.
And, I mean, Iowa was 6 of 17 on third down, which is not like the worst day you've ever had on third down, but it is not good. And it was really bad. And yeah. Michigan's offense was not any better.
No.
They couldn't run the ball. Their whole offensive game plan was finally throw it up to our tall wide receivers. And it's like, we were talking about it yesterday, and it was like, just do it every play then.
Right.
Like, if that's what's working, do it more. Because they were, you talk about 6 of 17 is bad. Michigan was 3 of 13 on third down. Shea Patterson has been the biggest disappointment when it comes to hype and performance this year across the country, as has
by far,
as has Josh Gattis.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, embarrassing.
Yeah. I mean, he only completed 14 passes of his 26. I mean, that's, you know, just above 50%. And he only had 147 yards, threw a pick, no touchdowns. I mean, he's not what you expected. That's for sure.
Well, he's certainly not what they said he would be, the best quarterback in the Big Ten.
Well, yeah.
All that
other nonsense.
Well, I think
Heisman front runner.
I think the problem goes back to, you know, they aren't letting Shea call the plays.
Oh yeah. Must be the problem.
It's a long Must time be the ago. Problem.
But I'll tell you this, as a professional, which Josh Gattis is a professional, right? He gets paid a lot of money.
Yeah,
he has had jobs at a bunch of big time schools.
Sounds good.
There's one thing that you don't normally do, and that is pop off at the mouth. There's another thing that, and I have not followed the first rule. when I was a football coach, I certainly did not keep my mouth shut. But what I always said was whatever you say, if you want to publicly say something or do anything like that, you better back it up.
Absolutely.
And boy, is he failing on that second point. It's not pretty.
And it's not a lack of skill. Like, it's not like he's at a program that doesn't have the skill to perform.
No, I mean, they had four all Big Ten linemen.
Yeah.
The one of the best O-line coaches in the country in Ed Warner, right?
They look sloppy and not coached well.
And they have three
what it looks like when
big time wide receivers, and they have their savior at quarterback. I don't understand.
Well, it's It is not going well in Ann Arbor, and they will tout this as a big win somehow, yeah. some way. But the wildest thing, and I want to play it right now for you, was Harbaugh's post-game quote about their offense and how it's going. So I want to play that right now.
I really think we're hitting our stride. I really do. The way our offense has been practicing, the way they've been preparing, I think it's I think I have great faith that they're hitting their stride.
Okay, I'm sorry. I heard that after the game, and I can't just not say something about it. Hitting your stride, the 93rd best offense in the country, 102nd best rushing offense in the country, 104th in explosive runs, 106th in allowing tackles for loss, 106th in turnovers. Hitting your stride, that type of delusion will get you fired. So I just, when I heard that, I was like, whoa, timeout. You can not throw your coaches under the bus and not throw your offense under the bus and still have some semblance of reality, some semblance of having a brain. My goodness, the delusions in Ann Arbor are going to end up tragic for Jim Harbaugh's tenure. That's all I'm going to say. Wow. I don't know about you guys, but for me, a game is 10 times more exciting when I'm putting my money on it. Sometimes I feel like I have a gut feeling about a matchup, and sometimes I'm just betting on my team because they're my team. Regardless of whether you've been betting for years or you're ready to play for the first time, MyBookie is your best bet this season. If you're the kind of guy who likes to try to bet a little to win a lot, try a parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of the big favorites this week, which you did this weekend, mm-hmm. Parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag because no one gives you more ways to win. Between football season, the MLB playoffs, and the start of the NBA and NHL seasons, it's time to get off the sidelines and get into action. If you really want to support your team this season, don't just sit on the sidelines. Get in the game with mybookie.ag. And if you join right now, MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code MENACE, MENACE, to activate the offer. That's promo code MENACE to double your cash. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. And I know we talked about it, and you did it this weekend, right?
I just did it, yeah. Over last week, I signed up, put $100 in there.
What are you up to? Where are you at?
With that $100, I won like about $220, something like that. Yeah. I did a parlay.
I was saying, did you do any NFL games?
Yeah.
So that's still in process.
Yeah.
But did you double your money?
I did.
Oh, look at you.
100%.
So you took advantage. So I would advise everyone to, if you like throwing some money on some games, go to mybookie.ag, double your money, and then just bet with the free money, yeah, right? And start with that.
The free stuff.
Worst case scenario, you're even if you lose.
Like they say, playing with house money.
Playing with house money. So check it out when you get a chance. Mybookie.ag. But outside of some gambling, how about the Buckeyes and Michigan State? That was it was a great game. And it was it exposed a lot of things. It provided a little adversity for Ohio State, which I think is so necessary. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, it's even more necessary. They need more of that. Ohio State needs more adversity. They need more struggles, more challenges. If you're one of those people right now that says, we want to win it all, I'm telling you right now, what Clemson is going through this season is not good for their chances at winning it all. And if Ohio State wants to win it all, which they do, which yeah. I'm sure a lot of these people listening do, they need to face adversity, survive adversity, learn how to get through adversity, because that's going to come. And the worst thing you could ever do is not have experienced it and then have to face it against the best team in the country. It's a bad deal. And the good thing is the first and second quarters were Jekyll and Hyde. It was two different teams, and it was definitely a growing experience for Ohio State. It was great for Justin Fields, for Ryan Day, for the offense to feel that kind of struggle initially and then mm-hmm. overcome it.
Well, Michigan State came out; they looked like they were juiced.
Yo, they were definitely juiced.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and they got their first the offense got their first taste of a real defense, right? Exactly. Like that's a first real good defense, like really good defense. Absolutely. They faced.
It's the first nationally relevant defense they faced, and the only good thing they had, I guess, as their ace in the hole was the offense. Michigan State's offense is horrendous, and so it was one of those. And I said it a number of times in a preview show. This is going to be a great test for the O-line, for the run game, for the offense as a whole, and luckily, it shouldn't be a huge test for the team.
Yeah.
Like the outcome.
You said it was going to be like, what, like a half a test for one side of the ball.
It was absolutely that. Yeah. And exactly. And the offensive line struggled bad at first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's what happens. You get hit with that bullet in your face, and it's like, whoa, timeout. This is not like the last four games. This is different.
This isn't Miami of Ohio.
And so I've always believed this, and I'm going to, before we get into more of the analytics of it, I heard a story from Urban Meyer about Tom Brady, and I've always believed this, and that's why this is going to be the mantra of, and it has been for the last four games, and it will continue to be, is I heard a story about Tom Brady. So Tom Brady was in Patriots minicamp, like just, you know, going through practice, whatever. Mm-hmm. And Urban was there. He was visiting, and he shared the story with us. And Tom Brady was throwing like he went like I want to say Urban said he went 12 for 12 on a 7-on-7 period or whatever, and was just dicing everyone up. And there was an assistant quarterback coach that kept being like, "Oh man, great throw, Tom! Oh man, great read, Tom!" And like kept just reinforcing what he was doing well, right? And he was like. So he ended up going like 12 for 12 or 12 for 13. But after he was like 8 for 8, he turned around. He was like, "Hey, man, shut up." And it was like, whoa. And the quarterback coach kind of, whoever the quarterback coach was, jumped in and was like, "Hey, what's going on?" He was like, "Hey, man, I don't need anyone telling me like, good job, great job. You did this great. Like, I don't need none of that. That doesn't do anything for me. That doesn't make me better. I don't care about that. I'm here to work. I'm here to get better. Like, if you see something that I need to improve or do better, tell me."
Yep.
And if you don't, we're good. Like Tom Brady looked at him and said, "I promise you, I know it was a great read. I know it was a great throw. I saw it."
Exactly. If I'm the one that did it.
But if you can tell me something that I didn't see or didn't do right, I need that. That's a nugget. I need it. And so when I analyze all these teams, specifically Ohio State, because I know people on the staff and players, I don't care about what they did really well. I mean, we'll talk about it, and I'll let you know what I saw they did really well. But that I want them to win the whole thing. I'm not going to be shy about it. I do. I want the players that I know and the coaches that I know to hoist the trophy. So I don't care about that. So I want to tell you what they need to improve on. Like when I watch Justin Fields, I think he's probably the best quarterback in the country. He's in the top three for sure. Mm-hmm. And so when I watch his game, I don't watch it to say, "Man, that was a great read and throw to Ben Victor on the long touchdown." Of course it was. We all know that. You all know that. What I want to talk about is, all right, where does he need to improve to get a Heisman Trophy? Because he's talented enough. So let's talk about where he could do better. And here's where he could do better. In the game against Michigan State, he played really well, other than two areas. He was 0 for 6 over 20 yards. So he didn't throw the ball well down the field.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And he was 0 for 5 with an interception when he was pressured. So that's twofold, right? That's one, Justin Fields needs to be a little bit better under pressure, and the O-line needs to protect him better because that's not his strong suit. It wasn't in this game. But at the end of the day, when he was kept clean, he was 17 of 20. For 206 yards and a touchdown. I mean, that's absurd. 85% completion percentage. That's absurd. And he's got the skill around him. And we haven't seen fully the skill on the perimeter that he has. We've seen flashes from Ben Victor. And we saw a major flash this on Saturday, right?
Yep.
It's amazing. When I watch Ben is, and he had a bad drop. Everyone knows that. What was so impressive was the bounce back, the confidence didn't drop. He didn't let it ruin him. He bounced back and made a couple great catches. And here's what's amazing to me, and this is why I recruited him. It's why I wanted him. well, I mean, one of the reasons is when he catches the football and takes off, he has electricity that most 6'3" and a half receivers don't have. He eats grass. I used to say it all the time to him. You eat grass when you run. Like, 2 strides, 5-yard gain. 4 strides, 10-yard gain. 6 strides, 15-yard gain. Or maybe 20. I mean, it's he runs and it's effortless. And it's so fluid. It's like he hit that sideline. And man, you talk about well-coached. And kudos to Brian Hartline. I used to teach it all the time, and I'm sure he still is. You hit that sideline and there's one defender. What do? You run right at him. Mm-hmm. And you attack him. And if he overruns, you cut back. If he doesn't, you stick him, freeze him, and keep going. And he did. And now the only thing I will say is you don't ever reach the ball at the pylon, because that was close to being one of those fumble touchbacks where you're furious.
Those are the worst.
But I watched Hartline correct him right afterwards. So he knows that. And yeah. Hopefully he doesn't do it again. But what a play. And it was really the play that ignited the offense.
Absolutely. You watch him run, man, and it doesn't even look like he's running fast because he's just taking up so much ground.
He's just floating, man.
It reminds me of it reminds me of Terrell Pryor.
Yeah.
Because when Terrell Pryor would run, everybody'd be like, man, he runs like a 4.2, 4.3, whatever. I'm like, he doesn't even look fast.
No.
But he just, they're so long that they just take up so much grass.
Yeah, for sure. And that's what Ben provides. And then, you watch KJ Hill had a really good game. Mm-hmm. He's that tried and true guy that you can always count on. Austin had a good game. The guys that didn't get involved as much, like Chris Olave, get involved as much. And Garrett Wilson was there a little bit, especially later in the game. But overall, as the offense goes, and Justin Fields specifically, he is making strides. He is playing extremely well, and he still has areas he can improve on. And I said it last week, and I'm going to say it again. If we focus on what he can improve at, he's going to be ridiculous.
He's special. He's a special talent.
Mm-hmm. Special. The other thing, the O-line, I've been more than critical of the O-line. and last week, they played really well, and I was fired up to see it. And the one thing I watched was the right tackle position, because Brandon Bowen has been playing. Well, obviously, he was a little dinged up, got injured, whatever. And so that was the position. He also hasn't played excellent, him and Josh Myers. Are the two that I watch, and I'm like, they need to play better. And so even in Ryan Day's post-game press conference, he said, both him and Josh Allaby, they earned the right to play. They deserve to play, and that's why we rolled them, which I agree with Ryan 100%, because Josh Allaby's the best pass pro tackle they have, and he's just not as good in the run game as Thayer or Brandon Bowen. But the only problem was, I said, I agree with Ryan, except they didn't rotate. Josh Allaby played 6 snaps in the game compared to Brandon Bowen's 70. But probably to send a message to Brandon Bowen and a testament to how Josh played initially, Josh Allaby got the start. So he was the starting right tackle for a huge game, which is huge for his momentum and his own story. The only problem was he wasn't playing well at all, and Greg Stardrawa made the switch back to Bowen, and he rode him at right tackle the rest of the game.
Yeah.
But Josh played 6 snaps, 3 of them in pass pro, and allowed 2 pressures. Yikes. He graded out 0% in pass pro. And like I said, prior to this game, that has been his strong suit. He's been the highest graded pass pro offensive lineman Ohio State has had. And then he went in this game, got to start. It was like, this could have been a changing of the guards. Like, it could have been, mm-hmm. I mean, you hear it all the time in college football. Yeah. This could have been that moment mm-hmm. where one guy takes the job from another guy, and he just did not do it.
Man, I got to tell you, I thought Billy Price was out there from the Bengals, because that's what he does every time he comes in.
Yeah, right. Oh, boy. But overall, I will say this. The first half was bad, or the first quarter was a bad quarter for the offensive line. And I think it was a good reality check, because they bounced back and they really, really played well the next 3 quarters. So as critical as I am on the offensive line and on the tight ends, the offensive line really bounced back. And the best thing I saw, the most encouraging thing as someone who wants the Buckeyes to be successful, was the tight end play, and most importantly, Luke Farrell. Luke Farrell was like the third highest graded player on offense, had a big touchdown. He played how I've been almost angrily bitching that he should be playing because he's more than capable, and he finally did it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you've been waiting for.
Right. I've been complaining. Like, come on, man. It's time to go. Like, you're the guy.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that it was impressive to me is they put up over 300 yards rushing on one of the best rushing defenses in the country.
Oh, absolutely. That was a huge, huge, huge point. And J.K. Dobbins finally, and I've been not critical, I've been fairly evaluative of J.K. Dobbins. He has had some, like, a handful of explosive runs that have inflated his numbers, and I've always said he needs to be a little bit more consistent, needs to be a much better pass protector, mm-hmm. and I need to see that Ezekiel Elliott, that Jonathan Taylor, because I've never seen it from him, ever. Mm-hmm. I saw it on Saturday.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to bring up is it's interesting because statistically, him and Jonathan Taylor are not that different.
Yeah, but you watch the film. Yeah, they're very different.
I know he's not Jonathan Taylor, but...
But I will tell you this. That the long run he had, the 67-yard run, literally, I watched it and I said, whoa.
Yeah.
And I've known this kid. I mean, I watched him on high school film. I watched him as a freshman, a sophomore. Watched him. Like, I've watched this kid mm-hmm. more than anyone that is talking on any podcast or radio. Like, I've watched practices, I've watched everything, and I've never seen what I saw on that 67-yard run. I've never seen him hit a crease and people are closing in, and there was a breakaway speed that I literally, when it happened, I said, holy shit. Like, I was the one that was going to be like, that's why he's not elite, because he got tripped up, because he doesn't have that. No, he showed it. Yep. And it's a testament to Mickey Marotti. It's a testament to him cutting his body fat and the work he's put in.
His work ethic.
I mean, it's what you want, right? It's what you look for in a player. That he's a different back.
It's what he had to do if he wanted to become an elite back, which I think he's not. You can't put him up there with Jonathan Taylor right now. So not people yet. That are trying to do that,
not
stop.
Yet. But I'll tell you this: literally last week when we recorded the show, I mean, adamantly fought anyone that said he was even in the conversation. He's in the conversation.
Yeah.
And I don't care what anyone says about stats. That one run mm-hmm. showed me he's in the conversation. But the real story here is the defense. And I'm going to start the conversation about the defense off with one thing and one thing only. What a pick six by Jordan Fuller.
Unreal.
And I don't give a shit what anyone says. I don't care what the stats say. I don't care what the Big Ten refs and Jim Delaney say. I don't care what none of them say. That was a pick six. I'm not taking that away from him. I mean, what a bogus call. And we could I could have an entire episode on that call.
That's ridiculous.
That's the problem with football right now. The problem is they see an issue and they overcorrect. Mm-hmm. It's like, don't get me wrong. I've coached it, I've taught it. I could pull up a cut up to show you dangerous crack blocks. I was the worst offender. Because it was legal, and I coached my guys to be tough-ass receivers.
Yeah.
We cracked DNs, linebackers, you name it.
You love them.
I mean, they didn't see it coming. Noah Brown cleaned the clock out of probably seven or eight defenders.
He's a big dude.
It's fun to watch.
But here's the problem. They see those clips, and they say, that needs to be out of football. And I agree. The problem is, then they say, all right, well, how do we classify it? How do we detail it? How do we write that narrative? And it's like, no. It's real simple. Did he just like blindside a guy and almost paralyze him? That's the hit you flag. Did the guy see him coming and he pushed him kind of like Barron did? Get out of here.
I hate that.
That's outrageous.
Yeah. Barron's the call on that is just, I don't understand it. I don't understand how that is even considered an illegal crackback block. I will never understand it.
I told you. It's the Big Ten officials, man. They come from the MAC. They're awful. They are awful. But I, like I said, I could go on for a whole episode just about that one call, because that is the NCAA and the referee association or whatever it is at its finest.
It brings me to a question. Who had the best crack block of your guys in your time?
Ooh, man. So my favorite by far, because he was only because he was such a great player on defense, is Marcus Allen at Penn State. And it wasn't dirty. It wasn't like not looking. But Terry McLaurin push cracked Marcus Allen. And if anyone knows anything about my career, and like you want to talk about perimeter run game, I mean, you could say what you want about me as a receiver coach, and I'll fight you on it. But there's one thing that no one can ever debate. The best perimeter blocking receivers in the United States of America, I coached them.
Yeah.
Because we blocked the perimeter. I'm talking like crazy. Like we would not be able to run the ball between the tackles, but in an behind the offensive line, which is all they do is run block. And it'd be like, go on the perimeter. And we'd seal that shit up. But that's a rant. But Terry McLaurin was one of my, him and Evan Spencer were probably my two best blockers I've ever had. Paris Campbell too. But Terry McLaurin push cracked Marcus Allen and laid him on his ass. And it's the only time I think Marcus Allen has ever been blocked like that, to the point where after the game, Marcus Allen went to find Terry and said, "Hey, bro, I've never been hit by, like that. Like that's like dapped him up, was like, yeah. Bro, good. That was legit." Like
he Andrew Lucked him, like, "Hey, nice hit, big guy."
Yeah. And I've got a bunch more. I always
thought Austin Mack was the best.
Well, Austin Mack's a good blocker too. Not,
that's what I always thought.
Yeah. Now I take that back. That was one of my favorites. My other favorite was in the Sugar Bowl against Alabama. Landon Collins.
Everybody knows him.
Whatever. He's probably Pro Bowl, whatever, first round pick.
All pro.
This best player that ever played.
He's not bad.
No. Evan Spencer crack blocked him once. The first time he did, Landon Collins quit playing.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you right now, you want to find out? Watch the film.
Yeah.
Evan Spencer cracked him, which That was my, I mean, that's my shit now. Push crack. that's how you keep a corner off and then block a safety and then let Zeke Elliott deal with like a pretty little corner instead of Landon Collins. So Evan Spencer push cracked him one time and it was clinic. It was so perfect. It was, I'm kind of getting excited right now. It was so good. And he hit him in the mouth and I mean, Evan even said, my belt kind of was wrong.
Yeah.
And Landon Collins looked him in the eye as he got his ass kicked and said, "Hey, bro, chill." and after he did, every time Evan went to block him, he was like, "Hey, chill, Landon, chill.
Just let up.
Watch the game.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's the same player that didn't want to hit Cardale Jones.
Yeah.
I mean, the rest of the game, he was done.
Yeah.
So... You caught me off guard. You didn't tell me you're gonna ask that.
No, and I just want everybody listening to take a minute and just think about how he just sounded talking about it. That's how you get the best blockers at wide receivers, because that's something that obviously he's very passionate about.
Yeah, it's conviction. You got to live by it. But anyways, back to what's relevant.
Sorry,
defense.
Yeah, back to what's today, not 2014. But back to the defense. Six missed tackles. More and more impressed every week.
Yep.
How this team tackles. It's phenomenal. And anyone that watched the Big Noon Kickoff, Urban talked about the rugby tackle.
Cheek to cheek, right?
Yeah. Cheek to cheek.
Cheek to cheek.
And it's even evolved since then. And this defense tackles so well. And I'm going to pull the stats for you on a preview show later in the week, because they have to lead the country in missed tackles. It's unbelievable. I've always said single missed tackles win the game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about Ohio State is five or less every game now.
Almost.
I mean,
they
had six against one of their better opponents. Six missed tackles.
I think that's the most they've had all year in a single game.
It might
game.
Be. But the other storyline here, and I've talked about him since the preview back in August, and even before then. It's a kid that I recruited. How about Cameron Brown? Cameron Brown had to play the entire second half because he filled in for an undisclosed injured Damon Arnett, which we'll find out what that is. But he came out and played the whole second half, held his own, graded out really high. You want to talk about the future at the BIA, Best in America?
Yeah.
DBU, whatever acronym we want to go with.
BIA, yeah.
BIA, DBU. It's like a 24-letter acronym now. But I've been told by several people in the program he's been coming on. I knew he would. I actually pounded the table for him, and then Urban helped me pound the table for him. And the defensive staff was kind of wishy-washy on whether they wanted him. And it got to the point where I said – And I did. He played receiver in high school. He was Cameron Babb's teammate. And I told him, I said, hey, I'll take him at receiver. Because I would have. He would have been I don't think he would have been, he would have been a, more of a project at receiver. But I told Urban, I said, hey, if we have a spot, I'll take him right, I'll take him at receiver. And then if he ends up being a corner, they'll thank me and I'll get another receiver later.
Exactly.
and that's what happened. But he's a phenomenal kid, phenomenal family, one of my favorite moms and dads I met. And that's what you look for. Mm-hmm. And I'm so proud of how he went in there and was played like nothing changed.
Yeah.
It's just Ohio State, man. It's BIA, right?
Absolutely.
But the one thing I will say, here's a testament, and you want to talk about Ohio State and their defensive philosophy, their scheme. They played against a quarterback who was one of the higher rated quarterbacks in the Big Ten. He was second behind Justin Fields going into the game.
Yeah, he led the Big Ten in passing yards.
Well, in yards, yeah. But in grades though, he was second.
Yeah.
Second to Justin Fields, mm-hmm. And he didn't play bad. People want to make it like he played bad. He didn't play bad. But the stats of where he threw the ball and how he threw the ball are evident on what is coming and how people are going to attack Ohio State. Yeah. So he threw the ball outside of the hash marks, right? Against the corners of Ohio State, he was 2 for 9, 22%. In the middle of the field, he was 18 to 26. So not only was he marginally successful in the middle of the field, he also threw the ball 26 times in the middle of the field compared to 9.
Yeah, he's not trying
to... There was no plan to throw it outside.
Yeah, teams aren't going to try to attack the corners.
No, and here's the other part.
Not these corners.
Here's the other part. He was 4 of 7 over 10 yards in the middle of the field. So not only was he was not attacking Jordan Fuller, he was not attacking the deep part of the middle of the field. He was 14 of 19 under 10 yards. That means their sole plan going into the game, 19 of 26 attempts were attack the linebackers.
Yeah, that's
attack
be
the zone coverage linebackers. And that will be everyone, but it's all about production. And 14 of 19, and so everyone needs to be aware of two conversations here. One is that's the issue. That's what Ohio State's defense needs to deal with. The other conversation is that's what you have to accept.
Yeah.
That's going to happen. They might complete the ball. They might go 14 and 19, but you're going to walk out of there with a big victory. So relax.
Yeah, they went 14 of 19, but you stopped the run well and only gave up 10 points. So whatever. That's fine. It. Let them complete those.
That's it. And so before we end the conversation, going back to my Tom Brady story, like, don't tell me things that we did great. Tell me what we need to improve. I got a couple things that need to be addressed and need to be fixed. And the first thing is the offensive line has to play consistent. Obviously, we know that. They have to play consistent. They have to run the ball well for four quarters. Mm-hmm. And the good thing is this was a great game. A great game to show the offensive line, to show Ohio State that it's not going to be that easy against a good run defense. And they saw that, they experienced it, and then J.K. goes off for 172 yards. So they got through that adversity. Now they got to do it again. And fortunately, they're going to face a Wisconsin defense coming up that is a little stouter than Michigan State. The other two things that I think need to improve are, number one, the field goal kicker. I don't think I can complain about it any more than I have. I don't think I can and make it aware more than I have. Not only does the right hash kill kickers, I mean, like, kills them, sniper, kills them immediately, but it needs to be addressed. The kicking situation at Ohio State, and it is being addressed. I think there's no one better, but that could hurt Ohio State in the long run. And my biggest fear right now in this football season is that at some point Ohio State does what they're supposed to do, makes the playoffs, and misses a kick, and loses the game. And people are like, God damn it, Zach Smith said that back in August. And I'm like,
why don't they just have open tryouts?
Well, it's not as easy.
Yeah, I mean,
but anyways,
miss a field goal.
But anyways, going back to that needs to improve. Yeah. Blake Hobaugh needs to improve, or someone else needs to pick up the rifle and go in. The other thing needs to happen is Ohio State's offense needs to score touchdowns in the red zone. Mm-hmm. Not scores in the red zone, touchdowns in the red zone, because that is the NFL game, and that is the game for big games in college is 2-minute offense, red zone, 2-minute offense and red zone, and obviously third down mixed in, but that is where Ohio State can improve is scoring touchdowns in the red zone. The best way to eliminate an average kicker, don't let him kick.
Yeah. Let him kick extra points.
Right. So just get in the red zone and score touchdowns. So those are my areas of improvement. But what a huge win for Ohio State. Huge win for the landscape. Huge win for their momentum. And huge win for them to solidify themselves as, hey, listen, we're real. I get the SEC talk. We're here.
Well, and I noticed the AP poll came out today.
Yeah, I saw
and,
that.
And they are now tied for third with
tied
Georgia.
For third. That's
tied
right.
with the same amount of votes.
Tied.
So, yeah.
Oh, that's good. All right. Anyways, it's time to wrap this up. I appreciate you guys tuning in. Again, as we mentioned in the last couple episodes, if you're interested in joining our platform, please reach out. There's Zach, Z-A-C-H, at menacetosocietypodcast.com. And then if you're interested in advertising or sponsorships, reach out to sponsorship at menacetosocietypodcast.com. But thank you for tuning in. Thank you for joining us. And make sure you tune in to Menace to Society, the national show that'll drop tomorrow. We'll be available later today on Patreon. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next show.
Gil Elliott, and he's got an opening. To the races. Can they catch him? No, they can't. Touchdown. 85 yards.
It's so easy to be average. It takes a little something to be special, Don. It takes a little something special to be a great player.
Braxton Miller's loose. Spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
We don't want to coach average. I don't want to be around you. Why be around average?
We're going inside him. We're going outside him. Inside him, outside him. And when we get him on a run once, we're going to keep him on a run. And we're not going to pass unless our secondary comes up too close. But don't forget, man, we're going to get him on a run. We're going to go, 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 go. And we aren't going to stop until we go to that goal line. Don't forget, man, today's the day we're going to win.
Menace to...